be sure to friend us on Facebook. You can do it right now. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America or search for us at keyword Voice America.
What if thinking just a little bit differently about your daughter could make her more respectful, a better student, or less vulnerable to peer pressure? What if a few simple changes in Good afternoon and welcome to Family First with five-time author and top speaker Randy Rolfe. Your family may be facing a variety of issues that you'd like addressed. No two families in the world face identical problems, but Randy has seen almost all of the difficulties families today face, and she and her expert guests have the answers that you seek. Now, here is your host, Randy Rolfe.
Hello and welcome to Family First. I'm your host, Randy Rolfe, and I'm very excited about today's show. We're going to be talking about transforming relationships, and the show's been growing for over a year. We have over 45,000 listeners, so thank you for listening, and you're going to be so excited about this show. So have you ever tried to change someone else to make them easier to deal with or more to your liking? Have you sometimes assumed that your own spontaneous reactions to the people around you are the safest and best thing to communicate or act on? And how has that worked for you? What are the most important relationships in your life? And how can we be the best me for our spouse, our children, our parents, and all those we care about? My guest this week on Family First is Lisa Oz, an esteemed and respected worldwide authority on the subject of well-being and relationships. Lisa Oz inspires audiences at a multitude of speaking engagements and events. She's a moving speaker, producer, writer, actress, and co-author of 6 New York Times best-selling books. She's going to be sharing with us some of the important ideas and very good strategies for transforming our relationships and ourselves. Lisa Oz has been heard on the Lisa Oz Show on the Oprah Winfrey Radio. She's also a frequent relationship expert on Good Day New York on Fox 5. Lisa's been in the New York Times bestseller list, as I mentioned, for the series You, the Owner's Manual. And I think there are 5 or 6, and we'll talk something about what's in there. And her most recent book is Us, Transforming Ourselves and the Relationships That Matter Most. She's president of Ozworks, LLC, a media and investment consulting company which she founded. She directs Pine Room Pictures, a production company specializing in family-friendly media. Her latest book, as I said, is Us, and it's inspiring thousands to have more rewarding relationships. She was born in Philadelphia, my hometown, and she received her undergraduate degree from Bryn Mawr College, which I went to Shipley just across the street. She attended Columbia University's Union Theological Seminary, and she lives in Cliffside Park, New Jersey, with her husband, Mehmet Dr. Oz, and of 26 years, and they have 4 kids, Daphne, 25, Arabella, 21, Zoe, 17, and Oliver, 12. So welcome to Family First, Lisa. This is quite an honor.
Thank you very much. I'm thrilled to be here.
You can speak to that issue of how to get everything in, how to be a parent, how to be a wife. How do you manage it with such a full life?
Well, you know, we all have 24 hours in the day. And I think that we end up doing what we love. And for me and for my husband, my husband loves his work, which is why he works so much. But we both prioritize our kids, so we don't do things that other families may do because we make up the time either working or spending it with our kids. So, for example, he doesn't golf. We don't watch TV. We don't have a social life. We never go out for dinner with friends unless it's a work-related event that he has to be at. So I think for me, it's always been about prioritizing, cutting out things maybe that you do like but that maybe aren't quite so important so that you can give your kids some quality time as well.
That makes so much sense, and it's great advice to really know what your priorities are, and you may have to skip some of those things that other people take for granted to be there for your family.
I think most of us waste so much, myself included, waste so much time. And if we looked back on a day and kept a journal just one day of where we spent our time, whether it was on the internet or watching a television show in the afternoon or in the evening right after dinner, or just doing things that aren't, going through a magazine, just things that aren't essential. And you can take those minutes and add them up and actually look into your kid's eyes or look into your spouse's eyes, have a real conversation. Don't have a television on the background when you're eating dinner. Really connect with the other people. I think we have so many distractions around us, and they're pleasurable, but they keep us from really connecting with each other.
Oh, that's so true. I know that the distractions, I'm a big advocate of having people just sit down and focus on the social event of sharing food and not having any distractions. That's great. So you've written a number of books, a series called You with the Owner's Manual for Health and for relaxation, for beauty, for getting what you need from health professionals. What inspired you to do that whole line of books with your husband and I believe another physician?
Yes, Michael Roizen. He's Mehmet's writing partner. He's fabulous. What happened initially is my husband was a cardiac surgeon. He still is. And I was in entertainment. And my favorite thing is to be with my husband. I can't really be with him when he's in the operating room. So I devised a ploy so that we could work together by creating a television show called Second Opinion, which he would be the host of and I would produce. And it was great. We got to work together, and I got to boss him around legitimately, and he couldn't complain about it. And after the show was canceled, we realized that there was a hunger for health information in an accessible way, because so often health books, health programming, health articles are that dour, sour, unsettling, depressing information, and people were looking for something a little more upbeat, a little more proactive, not so serious. So we decided to write books together, and Mike, we brought Mike in because he had a book series of books called Real Age with a website with this wealth of research and information. So we figured Mehmet could be the one who would articulate the message in a fun, passionate, accessible way, and Mike could provide all this great information. So they were a fabulous team.
Oh, that must have been a lot of fun and fascinating, and I love that it was a ploy to work together. I hear wives saying, they can't imagine spending all day with their husband working and then doing the parenting, and I've never felt that way. We rebuilt an old farmhouse together, and we love working together. So how do you think that that evolved for you, that you work so well together?
Well, there's actually great synergy. We're kind of opposites, which is why I think we work so well together. I call us the sandwich team, because I'm a bread person. Unfortunately, in life too, I'm a vegetarian, but my friends call me a carbitarian because I do like bread and pasta. But I am the kind of person who comes up with concepts. So I'm at the beginning of a task. I'm really good. I'm very imaginative. I can throw out great ideas. And then I'm really good at the end, taking a product and polishing it and rewriting it and or editing it down and making it from good to great. Mehmet is the kind of person who is really, he's what I call him, is the meat of the sandwich. He's really good at the actual follow-through. I have 15 projects that, or maybe more actually, started, never completed. He is the kind of person who just puts his nose to the grind, marches through, gets it done, gets it handed in on time. So we work really well together because we have different strengths and assets.
That's very cool. So you're really complimentary, and you play to those strengths.
Right.
That's neat. We hear about breakups all the time in the news now. Some are expected, some are all of a sudden breaking hearts. So to what do you attribute your success in your marriage, Lisa?
First of all, this kind of question always makes me really nervous because I never want to be like the paragon of a perfect marriage, because no marriage is perfect. You know, every marriage has its ups and downs and struggles. And certainly I think there are some marriages where there are external circumstances like death in the family or massive financial ruin. There are always external circumstances that I don't think any or very few relationships can withstand. And thankfully, you know, we have been blessed to have not had huge struggles. But even given that, I think a lot of people forget to prioritize the, here we are back with priorities again,
yes,
but to make the marriage the focus, to realize that there's something above what you want as individuals and that there's something higher, which is the union. I think so many times people let their egos get in the way, and it's more important to be right than to be together. And for me, I think two of the most important things are honesty, and I don't mean being honest with the other person, because that's a given. If you're not honest with the other person, you don't really have a relationship with them, but to be honest with yourself so you know when what is going on is about something deeper than what you say it is, when your ego is involved, when you're hurt underneath the anger, and then being able to communicate your true feelings to your partner. So it's really about being vulnerable. And it's funny because you always think that vulnerability is an unsafe place. But I think when you allow yourself to open up like that, you're more, even if the other person doesn't accept it the way that you expect them to, it is because of your ability to be in touch with yourself, you're in a much safer place. So I think a lot of it is that. It's about that going deeper in the relationship to get the relationship deeper.
That makes a lot of sense. I know they say a lot of young people, they focus so much on the wedding, and they think that once they're in the same house and they have a kid, and they kind of put the marriage relationship on the back burner. They assume it's there for all time instead of working on it. Have you seen that?
Yeah, well, that's the thing, is any relationship, not just marriages, but friendships, familial relationships, but primarily a relationship with our spouse, is not a static thing. It's like a plant. It needs to be nurtured or it will wither and die. And I think so many of us have a tendency to check off that box, you know, so married, check, kids, check, and you've done it, and so you can move on to the next thing you're going to focus on. And we stop all those things that we did early in the relationships, pay attention to the other person, do thoughtful things for them, initiate, you know, more affectionate behavior, all those things that we did at one point we think we don't need to do anymore because we've achieved a certain goal. And the thing about relationships is they're always in flux, so they can always be getting better or be getting worse, but they never stay the same. So, you know, if you want a relationship to grow and to become more committed and more intimate, you have to put the time in.
It makes a lot of sense, Lisa. So what would you say is the biggest challenge in relationships today when we're trying to relate to the people around us?
I think there are a couple of things. But today, as opposed to any other time, I think distractions, as I mentioned before, I do think that we use our soft addictions. And I think most of us are addicted to something. You know, we think of addictions as like alcohol, drugs, gambling, but I think we are so addicted to our distractions, whether it's television, telephone, internet, anything in front of us, food, that allow us to numb the feelings of dissatisfaction that we have in our lives, including in our relationships, so that we never actually experience what is going on with ourselves, so that we can't deal with those issues And if we don't deal with them, we cannot grow. So in a relationship, I think if we're constantly numbing ourselves, if we're eating to cover up frustration, or we're turning on the television instead of having a fight with our spouse, I think that if we're always doing that, we're never going to be able to take our relationship to another place.
That makes a lot of sense. I hadn't heard that term before, soft addictions, and that's very apropos that it changes the way we're interacting with ourselves, numbing our feelings so that we don't do anything about something that's bothering us, and then we might blurt out at a kid or reject a spouse or just feel bad about ourselves and think that food or TV is the answer. I like that concept, soft addictions.
Yeah, we're all guilty of it. We all do it all the time, I think. And it's not that you don't want to feel better. You do. But if it's like taking a medication that never cures a disease but just keeps the symptoms subdued. So you never really get to the root of the problem. And I think that, for a lot of us, is an issue in our relationships.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, some of those our human ability to distract ourselves can be useful, but only to a point. And if we're not aware that it's getting hold of us, yeah, it can really cause problems. So in your book, you talk about three key relationships. Can you explain about those?
Yeah. So what I talk about is the way that I define relationships are not possessions. Like, people always say, I have a mother, I have a teacher, I have a cousin. But I like to think of relationships as states of being. So the way that we're in like gravitational force. So we're in relationship, as all objects are in gravitational relationship to every other object, I think we're in relation, we live and exist in relationship to all other beings, with a greater relationship to those that are closer to us, the same way that gravity has more force on objects that are closer to each other. So relationships are states of being, and I think we exist in three separate states. We have three primary relationships. The first is our relationship to ourself and who we are, how well we know who we are, our true self at our core versus all of the things that we layer on top of it that we are attached to, everything from our, you know, financial status to what sports team we root for. Mm-hmm. Getting to really know who we are and be comfortable with that is the foundation for every other relationship we have. And then the next phase of relationship is the relationship with the other, and that's all, I think, all beings, those that are closest to us, but also those in the rest of the world, because we are a global community, and what we do has impact far greater than I think that we know. And the last, which comes into play in the last area that we exist in relationship, and I believe that's in relationship to the divine. Now, however you define that, whether you believe in God or not, something that is higher than yourself. When you make yourself the biggest thing in the universe, and what you want is the most important thing at any given time, the universe becomes incredibly small. So we have to have, in order for us to expand and grow and be and work on personal transformation, there has to be something bigger to strive for. And that can be the community, it can be ethics, it can be creative force, it can be light. I term it the divine, because most people don't have issues, you know, with the word the divine, but something bigger than ourselves. And those three areas are connected.
Lisa, we're coming up on a break, and I want to come back to those. Sure. I don't want to shorten that discussion. So important. So we'll have a break, but listeners, do stay tuned. We're going to cover a whole lot more about relationships with our special guest, Lisa Oz.
Be sure to friend us on Facebook. You can do it right now. Visit facebook.com/Voice America or search for us at keyword Voice America.
What if thinking just a little bit differently about your daughter could make her more respectful, a better student, or less vulnerable to peer pressure? What if a few simple changes in your words with your son could make him more responsible, a better listener, or more fun? Five-time author and dynamic speaker Randy Rolfe has answers to your questions about family matters, whether it's your kids, parents, schools, health and diet issues, finances, or life balance. Randy can help you. The World Ambassador for Family, Randy Rolfe has been helping families since 1985 to minimize the stress and heartache of modern living. To access some great and free downloadable tools, to get one of her internationally acclaimed books, or to have her inspire and excite your next event as your featured speaker, go to www.randyrolfe.com. That's RandyRolfe.com. Your family will thank you.
Hi, I'm Neil Haley, host of the Total Education Network. We're the only education talk show that airs shows 7 days a week on different stations. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org to learn about the exciting shows coming to the network. The show brings the total education experience. We interview interesting guests, have lively debates, and provide news and provide tips for parents. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org for more information. Remember, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators, TotalTutor.org.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're tuned in to Family First with your host, Randy Rolfe. To speak to Randy or her guests, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to randyrolfe@randyrolfe.com. Now, back to Family First.
Welcome back to Family First. We're talking about transforming our relationships kind of from the inside out. And we're speaking with Lisa Oz, who's well-known expert on relationships and family wellness and has four children and a wonderful husband of her own. Actually, she's in those relationships, so she doesn't own them. And we've been talking about how important it is to know that you're in your relationships. You don't control them. You don't own them. They're not a possession that you can manipulate. They're something that you grow in. And it's about prioritizing in your family and maybe not doing some of the things that you can afford to let go of because they're not your favorite things. Figure out what your favorite things are, and hopefully it's your family relationships, and arrange your time around that and the work that you love. And we were just discussing the three key relationships that define who we are in the world, and that is the self, the relationship with yourself, the relationship with others, and the relationship with the divine. And we were just talking about that you need to know that you're part of something greater than yourself. If you think you're the center of the universe, it's going to be pretty hard to have good relationships. So Lisa, these three relationships, people are so basically overwhelmed and frustrated a lot of the time during their day. How do we nurture all of these relationships in our lives each day?
Well, I think the one thing that certainly all the great masters that I've read point to is a awareness. And just to bring that into everything, now, that's not easy to do, to be aware every moment. But if we strive to be aware, you know, if we don't even try, it'll never happen. But if we make a concerted effort to be more aware in our lives, so more present, less distracted, there's an exercise that I do in some of the talks I give where I tell people to take 1 minute a day and for 1 week, pick the same time every day. So right now it's 4:25. Pick 4:25 for the rest of the week. And when you are in the middle of the day and that time, you can set your watch, the timer goes off, don't stop what you're doing. Do not judge or censor what's going on. Just observe it. And what happens is you start to see that you start to have this identification with the observing self rather than the reactive self. And if you can bring that sense of observation just a little bit more into your day on a regular basis, you can be aware of, I think, your relationships with other people. You can be aware of what's going on within you when you're in those interactions, and I think you can be more present to the presence of the divine in your life if you just concentrate on the awareness.
That makes a lot of sense. I'm thinking of that whole awareness we talked earlier about, the distractions that can keep us from being in touch with ourselves, and even just being aware that you're using a distraction. Maybe you need a little time out and you want to watch a silly show, but being aware that you're doing that, then you can still be in touch with who you are and what you want and why you're doing this, and be aware of the impact on your sense of self and your sense of yourself in the world with the divine.
Yeah.
That sounds, I know, that's a great idea, taking a moment, just one moment each day to get in the habit of observing where you are. You know, how are you feeling and what are you doing, and how are you relating to those around you? That's a really neat idea, because I've read about, you know, take an hour in the morning and those kinds of things, which are powerful, but you have to start somewhere. And,
right.
And just one minute
is
a great idea.
And meditating and, you know, giving all of alms to the poor. But you can't do everything, and you'll never do anything if you don't do something. So just pick one thing and to change your life, whether it's bringing awareness into your life or gratitude into your life, compassion into your life. Pick something and do it in a tiny, 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 tiny way. But you do anything for 1 minute a day, you do it for a year, it adds up.
That's very powerful. I love that. You'll never do anything if you don't do something. So in your book, Us, you talk about parenting a lot, and you say that, of course, that's a really important relationship and responsibility. So what do you think is the biggest problem for parents today, Lisa?
Well, earlier you talked about problems in relationships, and I think that relationship with our kid, the biggest problem is the same, which is investment in our egos. And I think so often parents make it about themselves rather than about the kid. And we do things that are easier for us, or just allow us to justify ourselves, or make it about us being right or being in charge. You know, when kids thwart us, we take it personally and we feel like we have to put them back in their place. So I think any time that a situation with our children, whether they're toddlers who are driving us up the wall or teenagers who are refusing to listen to us, when our choices become about protecting our ego rather than nurturing our children, we're going to be in conflict, and we need to shift at that point, because our job is to raise our kids, not to, you know, build up our own egos.
Yeah, it's not about raising ourselves.
No, and sadly, it becomes about that. It becomes conflicts become about winning. If families are on the same team, you and your kids should be on the same team. So when they lose, you lose. But I think we lose sight of that. And I think so many of us opt for what is easiest. So we'll make choices that aren't always in our kids' best interest. You know, when they beg and beg and beg and beg and beg and beg to go to the party that we know we shouldn't let them go to, but we just can't stand the sound of them nagging us any longer, so we tell them to go ahead. Or when we have our own fears overwhelm us, so that we never let them take risks. On either side of the spectrum, it's about us, not about them. So as a parent, it's our obligation to step outside of that and really judge what's best for the kids.
That kind of, it goes back to the awareness of being able to step back and say, why am I reacting this way? Is it my fears, or am I really thinking of the best developmental approach for the child.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because none of us do. Again, I would never claim to have a perfect marriage, and I certainly would not claim to be a perfect parent. But when I am trying to be an aware parent, there's something that happens that's actually hysterical. I almost feel like a schizophrenic because on the one hand, I'm having this conversation with my daughter, for example, and we're in conflict and she wants to do something and I don't want her to do it, and I'm telling her why, because I said so. And then on the other hand, there's this voice inside my head that's saying, what is really going on here? So it's, you know, it's like the two voices inside my head having this conversation that's absolutely crazy, but it allows me to step back and examine the root of the conflict. So it can get a little crazy when you start talking to yourself while you're having a conversation with someone else, but it does help in giving you some clarity.
Yeah, it at least can slow you down a little so that you can take a look.
You have two conversations at once.
Right, right. Well, I like that idea of the family is on the same team. You know, we're all watching the Olympics in London right now, and they ask, you know, is there a friendly competition within the team? And often the athletes say yes, but they say, but we are a team. We root for each other. We try to support each other. We encourage each other. And that's what you want to do as a family, even when you have conflicts and disagreements.
Right. Right. And we lose sight of that sometimes.
You know, for sure. So there's been a lot of comment, and I think you've said it yourself, about parents trying too hard to be friends with their kids and to be popular and to not say no and that kind of thing. And while when I was doing active family therapy, I saw a real change from the late 80s to the late 90s of just being afraid to say no to their kids. And it's, how do you, help parents realize there's a time to not be in a popularity contest?
Well, the thing about wanting your kids to like you, and wanting to be popular with your kids, it's fear-based. I think it's parents worrying that their kids aren't going to love them. And I was always by far the strictest mother in my kids' classes, and they always thought I was terrible, and I wouldn't let them go see that R-rated movie. I wouldn't let them stay out past certain bedtime. I wouldn't let them go to certain parties, and they just thought I was bad, bad, bad. But kids are very smart, and one of the things in relationships that I talk about is that no matter what you say, your intention reads. So, and that's again true with most relationships. Not all. Some of us are better actors than others, but most of the time, you know how when you talk to someone and you're both smiling and you're saying nice things, but you walk away and you're thinking, ugh, I don't like that person.
Mm-hmm.
And it was nothing about what was actually said, but the underlying energy, that what intention actually reads. So with kids, when you are setting boundaries out of love and concern for them, they get that message loud and clear. And it's not from your fear, it's not out of laziness. Frequently, we let our kids do things that are not in their best interest because we don't want to have the fight with them, or we want to do something else, or it's convenient for us, or we want them to like us. But the thing is, as kids mature, they will actually appreciate. I've had every single one of my kids come back and say, you know, I actually am glad that you put your foot down there, and I actually appreciate the upbringing we had, because they do sense that it is not done because you just want to say no because you're the boss, but because you understand something that they don't at that time. So I would say to a parent, don't say no quickly. Really think through your answer, but when you do say no, stick to it. And the worst thing that happened is for you to vacillate. So the kid knows that if they nag you enough, you'll change your mind. And never say no just for the sake of saying no, but understand what your rules are based on your family's values, and then your kids will understand that what your actions are and what you want their actions to be are consistent with those values, they will appreciate it.
That makes a lot of sense. And I think it's important to know that there can be times where the kids might not like you. Some people experience that sometimes in the teenage years. But when they see what's happening to their friends who don't have those boundaries and don't have those limits, don't have the parents saying no appropriately, they quickly realize that even if they thought you were being arbitrary at the time, they tend to look back and say, wow, you know, she really said that because she knew that that was best for me. So there, even if it looks like you're losing them, you're not.
Well, you can, I think, if you are being arbitrary. Again, it's really about your intention and your ego. If it's about you, not a good thing. If it's about them, it's probably the right choice.
Exactly. So at the opposite extreme, we hear college professors complaining that they're helicopter parents, that even in college, that are going in and pitch hitting for their students, saying they should have gotten a better grade. It's going to affect their graduate school application or whatever. How do you explain on the other end where parents are too protective? I was raised very protected and maybe a little too protected, but I'd rather that than the opposite. But my parents, when I reached a certain age there, they assumed, you know, from now on you're making your own decisions. But I think a lot of parents are afraid to let go at that stage. So what's your advice there, Lisa?
Well, I think parenting is sort of like being a mother bird. You have two jobs. The first is to protect the eggs until they hatch and the little chicks become mature. And then the second half of your job is to kick them out of the nest and let them learn how to fly, because you don't want four adult birds sitting under you in your nest. You need to let them test their wings. And so I think we always have opportunities where you can let them take risks. Learn to fail. Part of it, you know, again, if it's about you, it's a problem. A lot of parents don't want their kids to fail, and it reflects badly on them, or they're afraid to let their child feel anything that is painful. But you want to learn to fail and pick yourself up and move on and experience pain in a environment that's safe, so that when you go out in the world for real, you know how to deal with it. Because when you're a helicopter parent and you never let your child experience any kind of failure or any kind of frustration or any kind of hurt, and then the world comes at them as it always does, they are not equipped. So you're actually, while you're trying to protect them, you've actually hurt them much more in the long run.
That makes a whole lot of sense when they're still in the safety net of the parents. Let them find their limits. Let them experience, like you say, frustration, pain, failure, make mistakes. What do you do when you make a mistake? And we're up on another break, Lisa. It goes really fast. But listeners, please stay tuned. We're going to be talking about more about transforming our relationships with ourselves and those around us with Lisa Oz.
Learn more. Live better. Voice America Health and Wellness.
What if thinking just a little bit differently about your daughter could make her more respectful, a better student, or less vulnerable to peer pressure? What if a few simple changes in your words with your son could make him more responsible, a better listener, or more fun? Five-time author and dynamic speaker Randy Rolf has answers to your questions about family matters, whether it's your kids, parents, schools, health and diet issues, finances, or life balance. Randy can help you. The World Ambassador for Family, Randy Rolf, has been helping families since 1985 to minimize the stress and heartache of modern living. To access some great and free downloadable tools, to get one of her internationally acclaimed books, or to have her inspire and excite your next event as your featured speaker, go to www.randyrolfe.com. That's RANDYROLFE.com. Your family will thank you.
Hi, I'm Neil Haley, host of the Total Education Network. We're the only education talk show that airs shows 7 days a week on different stations. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org to learn about the exciting shows coming to the network. The show brings the total education experience. We interview interesting guests, have lively debates, and provide news and provide tips for parents. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org for more information. Remember, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators, TotalTutor.org.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're tuned in to Family First with your host, Randy Rolfe. To speak to Randy or her guests, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to randyrolfe@randyrolfe.com. Now, back to Family First.
Welcome back to Family First. We're discussing transforming our relationships for the better. And my guest is Lisa Oz, who's a well-known speaker and author and producer and writer, has a number of best-selling books, and some of them were co-authored with her husband, Mahmoud Oz, the famous Dr. Oz, known around the world as well. And together they've done a lot of work on behalf of families and helping people build relationships with themselves, their health, their marriage, their parenting. And we've been having a wonderful discussion about how to raise kids is our most recent topic, and how we can go too far in protecting our kids and not letting them experience frustration, pain, make some mistakes within the security of their home, so that they have those tools for when they get out in the world. So, Lisa, I wanted to go on with that topic about what are some of the examples, maybe, of mistakes that a child could make that would be within that realm where you need to step back a little bit and let them choose. Like a two-year-old, you let them pull out clothes that don't match, but it gets a little tougher later on.
Right. So yes, it does. But you know, the thing is, for every family, it's different because we have different values as a family. But I think the boundaries you need to set have to be consistent with those values. So what you let your child do, you determine based on whether that's consistent with your values. In terms of like failing, one of the things that helicopter parents tend to do is schoolwork for their children. So I was just spent some time with a mother who is, you know, helping her daughter with her college applications, but is like going over with fine-tooth comb, editing, rewriting, practically doing the college essays herself. And I don't think that's worthwhile. It's not a good learning exercise for the kid. It doesn't portray the child in the best light for colleges because it's not, who she is. And so it's the same thing in kindergarten. You know, when you do your kids' homework, they're not learning. So that, I think that's one area. Not that we shouldn't help our kids, and I do think that people should always help their children to the best degree that they can, but you need to let kids have their own successes and their own failures, because if they don't, then they don't trust themselves, and they don't, when they're off in school by themselves and they have an assignment and you're not there to help them with it, they don't know what they're capable of. So all along the way, be a safety net, but make your kid struggle enough so that they know their capabilities, they know they can do it. Because unless you have faced an obstacle and overcome it, you never know what your strength is, and then you won't have the courage or the fortitude to persevere when you come up against bigger obstacles.
Oh, that's so well put. I love that. And letting them know their successes and their failures, and it's so important to be there for them. But often, they'll ask for help if they've reached their limit. But at least they know where their limit is, and they know it's okay to ask for help. But if you never let them get to that point, they're not prepared for life.
Also, to face consequences of their choices. A lot of times, we will do things so that kids are spared hardship, even though they've made a particular choice. Like if your kid stays up too late and doesn't get their homework done, and then they want you to write a homework note for them saying, you know, they were sick or something. But then they're not learning that every choice has ramifications. So, and again, maybe there was a legitimate reason they didn't get their homework done, and then of course you would want to do whatever you could to support them. However, I do think one of the things that helicopter parenting does is prevent kids from understanding that their choices have consequences.
Yeah, it's critical. It seems, especially having been a lawyer, I'm very aware that in the last 20 years we've been much more litigious. We tend to blame others for everything that happens.
Yeah.
And if you're always making excuses for your child's mistakes, they start thinking they can get away with stuff and they can blame somebody else or find an excuse rather than owning up to their own responsibilities.
Yeah, no, and that doesn't work in the real world.
No, people don't let you do that in the real world. So how can we improve our relationships? We can't control or manipulate. We can't change somebody else to make them work to our liking. What are some of the things you advise people to do? You mentioned awareness earlier, taking a moment to just look at yourself from the outside. What are some other things that you recommend, Lisa?
Well, I think the most important thing we can do in any of our relationships is understand that a relationship is like an equation. So if you have 1 + 3 and it equals 4, the sum is 4. If we don't like 4, most of us always think that the way to change the outcome is to focus on the other person. I can't tell you how many times I personally have said, if only he would do this differently, then everything would be fine.
Mm-hmm.
So we always think that the other person is to blame. They may or may not be. I'm not suggesting that your partner or your spouse is always in the right. But mm-hmm. it doesn't make any difference, because you will never change them. And you cannot believe me and go about trying to change a person for another decade or so, but eventually you will come to the same realization, because I've spent many, many, many years trying to change my husband. And people can change, but they need to change for themselves. And that doesn't mean that the relationship can't change, because just as in an equation, if you think you change the 3, you'll change the 4 to a 5. If you change yourself to a 2, then the relationship becomes a 5 anyway. So what we can do to improve any one of our relationships is commit to personal growth on our own. So be more honest, more compassionate, more present, more aware, whatever it is. And, you know, we all have our own areas of growth. And some people need to be more honest in their lives. Some people need to be more hardworking. Our inner selves know where we all need to grow. When we work on that, our relationships shift. They may not shift the way we think they will, but if we are committing to being a more complete person and transforming ourselves, the relationship will change.
That's very cool. So when you say I love what you said, your inner self knows where you need to grow. How do we get in touch with that, Lisa?
You know, you just have to look. I'll tell you a really quick story, that's in my book, but it's where I was frustrated because Mehmet wasn't coming home for dinner at night and for years. And I would fight with him. I'd beg him. I'd nag him. I did everything I could to try and force him to come home for dinner at night. And finally, you know, I asked myself, well, why do I care? That schizophrenic voice again of what, when he comes home for dinner. And as well, the kids weren't eating in time and they were tired and they weren't getting up in the morning. So the voice inside my head said, feed them earlier. And they don't, if he does chooses not to see them at night, he won't see them. So I put them to bed and all those excuses were gone, but I was still angry. So at that point, I had to ask myself what was really going on. And what was really going on was that I didn't feel like he valued not merely the family time, but me enough. And B, I was kind of jealous that he had something he was so passionate about that he was willing to work late at night. And I didn't have that in my life. So what it forced me to do was find something. And I love my kids and I love being a mother, but I needed something that would give me more stimulation, give me an opportunity to contribute outside of the home, and allow me to be more creative. So that forced me, by being honest with myself, that was, and being aware of what was going on, it pointed me in the direction that my spirit needed for growth. And so without that situation and without peeling away the layers of it, I never would have acted on that. But by doing that, I didn't get him to come home for dinner on time. I've got to admit that. But it did change the way I felt when he didn't come home, which changed our relationship. So I wasn't nagging him. He wasn't getting mad back. He still gets home late, but our relationship isn't suffering because of that.
Oh, that's a great story. And it really shows how you do have to dig deep to recognize what's really going on. And, you know, you got rid of the excuse about the kids' schedule, and then you had to dig in and see what was ticking you off to such an extent, and then you changed yourself. That's a great story. Thanks for sharing that. And you have that story in us transforming ourselves and the relationships that matter most. So that's awesome book. I'm sure there's other great stories to that we can all identify with. Because when you do have a spouse who loves something they're doing, you do need to have something that you love as well, and that you can enrich both your lives by doing things you love that may not be elbow to elbow, but you bring them back and share them and without feeling jealous or nagging or feeling undervalued. I think that's one of the biggest challenges in marriage, is that somebody feels like they're not being respected and valued. Can you address that for a moment? We're coming up on the end almost.
Well, you know, I think that you've got to value yourself first, and we're always looking for external validation, but I think more importantly, when we're doing something that we think is important and that where we are pushing ourselves to go beyond our limits, and so we have that sense of accomplishment and contribution, where we feel significant but also part of the community, I think then we stop looking for affirmation from the outside, and it's really about our inner knowledge of our own worth.
It reminds me of the old saying of Socrates, you know thyself, and then other things tend to fall in place. Or the unexamined life is a life not worth living. It's kind of strange that we have to kind of step outside ourselves to look, but that's the only way we can stop being emotionally reactive and do what's in the best interest of ourselves and others.
Yeah. We think that we can, it's almost an excuse. We want validation and respect and love from other people, so we spend so much time trying to get that we let ourselves off the hook for giving that. And I think when we focus on our contribution to any relationship, on what we're giving, we stop looking for what we're getting, and we actually end up getting much more.
That makes so much sense. And that's a spiritual law in so many traditions that you have to let go of the expecting and give, and then you will receive. That's so powerful. So we just have two more minutes. So what's the main message that you'd like to leave with our audience today, Lisa?
Wow. In 2 minutes. You know, I think that every life is an opportunity to be something, to be a vessel for light, I think. And I think every minute in our lives we can choose to be a force of light in the world, or not. And I think that when we can become more aware of our choices and choose to be a source of light through compassion, through kindness, through loving relationships, I think that we are doing what we're here to do.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. Well, you certainly are spreading light wherever you go, Lisa, and I'm really honored to have you on my show, Family First, and good luck with all of your work, speaking around the world and producing these wonderful, easily accessible books and programs and radio shows, and you're a wonderful, talented person, and thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
Now take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We hope you've enjoyed Family First. Please tune in to our program every Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time, to join your host, Randy Rolfe, on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. The weekend is here. Enjoy it with your family. And we hope to see you here next week.